This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Los Angeles Times is one of the best newspapers in America, but it used to be widely acknowledged as one of the worst. News anchor Chet Huntley once joked that he always read the Los Angeles Times and knew he could be reasonably accurate by going 180 degrees in the other direction. My guest, Dennis McDougall, is the author of a new book about the history of the Times and the Chandler family that owned it for over 100 years. The book focuses on the paper's fourth publisher, Otis Chandler, who turned the paper around. The book is called Privileged Son, Otis Chandler and the Rise and Fall of the L.A. Times Dynasty. McDougall was a reporter at the Times from 1981 to 92, a period at the paper he describes as nirvana for journalists. I asked McDougall to describe the Los Angeles Times politics in its early years.
The Los Angeles Times was a right-wing, right of Attila the Hun, Republican rag throughout most of its history. It was founded back in the 1880s and quickly fell into the hands of Otis Chandler's great-grandfather, General Harrison Otis, who started out, interestingly enough, as sort of a Union firebrand when he was a typesetter back in Ohio prior to the Civil War. But by the time he got to California in the 1880s, he became this virulent anti-union firebrand. And his newspaper reflected that voice. He turned the Los Angeles Times in the space of a few years into the preeminent newspaper in the United States for management in what turned out to be basically a national civil war between labor and management throughout the first couple of decades of the 20th century.
What were some of the other issues that the LA Times supported?
Well, it became a rah-rah sheet for Southern California. It was for many years, for better than half a century, the Los Angeles Times published what it called its midwinter edition, which came out every January and was put on the trains and sent back to the East Coast and the Midwest for the express purpose of hyping the climate and the agriculture and the palm trees and the blue skies, the wonderful, wonderful Eden on Earth that Los Angeles was believed to have been in the first half of the 20th century. And that was expressly to bring people to the West Coast so that they would buy real estate, much of which was owned by Otis Chandler's grandfather, Harry Chandler.
You know, what were some of the holdings that the family had?
I guess at one time it was well in excess of 1.5 million acres. This would have been probably in the teens and the early 20s. But Harry Chandler was this fabulous character who out-hearsted William Randolph Hearst, began building real estate syndicates to buy up large swaths of land in Southern California in the early part of the 20th century, the best known of which, of course, was the San Fernando Valley, the basis of the motion picture Chinatown rests on the legacy of Harry Chandler. And in fact, the John Huston character in Chinatown is patterned after Harry Chandler. The Chandlers owned a huge ranch that straddled the Mexican border between Baja California and California, some 860,000 acres. It was so large and so productive from an agricultural standpoint that in the late teens and early 20s of the 20th century, it was the largest producer of cotton in the world. And his biggest holding that up until just a few years ago remained in the hands of the Chandler family is still the largest undeveloped piece of privately held property in Southern California. It's called the Tejon Ranch, and it's between Los Angeles and a Bakersfield. It's a huge property that is that also just happens to be the place where the California Aqueduct pumps its water into Los Angeles.
You write that for most of the 20th century, the LA Times and its publishers dictated Southern California politics. How did the paper use its political muscle?
Well, all the way back to General Harrison Otis's time, which was roughly 1880 until his death in 1917, the Times was adjudged to be the house organ of the California Republican Party. It came down to what's good for business in Southern California, not necessarily what's good for the people, but how do we make the booming economy boom even more? How do we make the growing population burgeon beyond its limits? So, any kind of political policy that favored the development of real estate, the increase of water resources or any other kind of resources, transportation, anything that would make Southern California an attractive place for an Easterner to finally set down roots and become part of the economy, that became the policy promulgated by the Los Angeles Times.
My guest is Dennis McDougall, author of Privileged Son. It's a history of the Los Angeles Times and the Chandler family, which owned it for over 100 years. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dennis McDougall, author of Privileged Son, Otis Chandler, and the Rise and Fall of the Los Angeles Times Dynasty. Let's use Richard Nixon as an example of a candidate who the LA Times backed when he started his political career. He first ran as a Republican candidate in a Democratic congressional district in 1946. Why did the Times support Nixon then?
Well, Richard Nixon had a well-known godfather named Murray Chotiner, and it was Chotiner who advised Nixon to get the support of all of the newspapers that published in the targeted Democratic congressional seat that he was seeking. And the Los Angeles Times, of course, had the largest circulation. He went to the Times and met with Norman Chandler and his chief political correspondent, a fellow named Kyle Palmer, who was regarded as being the kingmaker in California at the time. And they liked what they saw. An ambitious young man, a World War II veteran, who was virulently anti-labor and pro-business. And they backed him 110%.
Yeah, you say that the paper wrote fawning headlines in spite of Nixon's smear tactics in his campaign. Do you remember any of the headlines?
Oh, gosh, not off the top of my head. I mean, it was it was supposedly Kyle Palmer who came up with the idea of labeling Helen Gehagen Douglas the Pink Lady. She was the Democratic state senator who ran against Nixon for California's Senate seat in 1950, and he soundly trounced her, again with the help of the Los Angeles Times. If you were a Democrat, you simply did not exist. It was almost a Stalinist approach to partisan politics. If you were anything other than a Republican, you deserved no ink whatsoever in the Los Angeles Times.
What role did the Los Angeles Times play, if any, in Nixon's nomination to the vice presidency in 1952?
By that time, Norman Chandler, the third in the line of Chandlers, or Otis's Ann Chandler, was publisher of the Los Angeles Times, and he had married a young department store heiress from Long Beach. Dorothy Buffum was her maiden name, and she became Dorothy Buffum Chandler. And it was Dorothy in 1952 who, probably more so than either Norman Chandler, her husband, or Kyle Palmer, the political editor of the Los Angeles Times, who championed for Richard Nixon as the vice presidential candidate at the convention in Chicago. She actually went to a publisher of a Chicago newspaper asked him to plant stories, speculative stories, on the front page about this young senator from California as being a dark horse candidate for the vice presidency, so that she could increase his chances of becoming Eisenhower's running mate.
Yeah, the year that Richard Nixon ran for the presidency is the same year that Otis Chandler took over the Los Angeles Times, and it was Chandler who basically ended the Times' reputation for being a right-wing paper. Chandler was the fourth publisher of the Times. He was 32 when he took it over in 1960. What were the first steps that he made in the direction of having a paper that wasn't a political mouthpiece?
Otis was a cipher. He came out of nowhere, and everyone automatically assumed, because he looked like the Southern California golden boy, his appearance was that of a know-nothing surfer dude, that that he was just going to be a reflection, probably a poor reflection, of his lackluster father, Norman, and that it was just going to be business as usual at the Los Angeles Times. And they were in for a big surprise, because the very first thing that Otis Chandler and his very talented editor, Nick Williams, did was commission a five-part series on the John Birch Society, which unmasked the... I mean, we forget about it now, but back in the late 50s, the John Birch Society was a power to be reckoned with. It was a right-wing group that believed that, you know, there was a communist under every rock. And Otis very courageously commissioned this five-part series and then wrote a front-page editorial. Signed editorial saying that the John Birch Society should be uprooted and run out of the country. Now, what makes that particularly courageous is the fact that Otis Chandler's aunt and uncle, Norman Chandler's brother and sister-in-law, were leaders of the John Birch Society in Southern California. So he was actually, at that point, going against the family. A short time after that, Philip Chandler, who was a ranking member of the board of trustees of the company that owned the Times, resigned in disgrace and died a few years after that. But he also, that is, Otis, also planted the seeds for rancor that would eventually lead to his own demise as publisher of the Times.
Well, when Otis Chandler took over the paper, how did the coverage of Richard Nixon change in the LA Times?
Well, it actually is kind of funny because, you know, Otis took over as publisher, and basically what he did was instruct Nick Williams, his editor, and all of Nick's subordinates to begin covering both sides of the news. That meant covering both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. That meant covering the negative side of a candidate as well as the positive side of a candidate. And Richard Nixon, who had been born and bred throughout his political life on the notion of always getting positive press in the Los Angeles Times was in for a rude awakening, because what happened then from his loss to John Kennedy until his loss of the California gubernatorial election to Pat Brown 2 years later was that the Los Angeles Times began reporting his gaffes when he made some sweeping statistical statement about California and some negative statement about his opponent. The reporter would actually go to the opponent and say, "Is that true?" This was astonishing. Nixon had never run into this before, and he felt betrayed. So in 1962, when he ran for the California governorship against Pat Brown and he lost, he staged his famous press conference in which he told the gathered members of the Fourth Estate that they wouldn't have Richard Nixon to kick around anymore. And he specifically, Dorothy Chandler pointed this out years later, he specifically was aiming his comments towards the Los Angeles Times.
Did he ever try to do anything to retaliate against the Times?
I mean, for the next several years, of course, he went into semi-seclusion and began planning for his resurrection, which, of course, happened in 1968. But Nixon, of course, never forgot. And when an opportunity presented itself, he did what he could to get back at the Chandlers, and Otis in particular. On a recently released tape from the Nixon tape archives, there is a conversation between Nixon and H.R. Haldeman about Otis Chandler, who at the time lived in the very upscale suburb of San Marino, and how all of Otis Chandler's servants were Mexican, and that, or as Nixon unceremoniously put it in his unguarded speech in the Oval Office, they were wetbacks, and he said that these people could be shipped back to Mexico with ease if he could turn the INS loose on him. And he just reveled in the idea of doing that and embarrassing Otis Chandler as much as possible.
My guest is Dennis McDougall, author of Privileged Son, A History of the Los Angeles Times and the Chandler Family, which owned it for over 100 years. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Dennis McDougall. His new book is called Privileged Son, Otis Chandler and the Rise and Fall of the L.A. Times Dynasty. When Otis Chandler took over the Times, what are some of the changes that he made in addition to insisting on more politically fair coverage?
Well, again, you have to remember that the Los Angeles Times, even though it was a Republican rag, was easily, at the time that Otis took over, the richest newspaper in the United States, or fast approaching it. It had more advertising lineage than any other newspaper. There was money galore, but it was not being put back into the newspaper. And that was what Otis began to initiate the second that he took over. He opened foreign bureaus all over the world. I mean, he patterned the Los Angeles Times in many respects after the New York Times, which he greatly respected and which he regarded as his chief competition. He also opened national bureaus in every major city in the United States. He beefed up the Washington Bureau such that it was at least as competitive and had as many bodies typing away in it as the New York Times. And his whole attitude was, we have this revenue-producing sheet that goes out to people, and apparently they like it enough to subscribe to it in droves. Now we're going to turn this into a top-notch newspaper. It's going to be literary. It's going to have the best journalists that money can buy. And that's exactly what he did. He went out and hired away the best people that he could from the East Coast journalism establishment.
When and why did Otis Chandler step down from his position as publisher of the Times?
Well, Otis stepped down in 1986, officially. This is something that's still difficult for him to talk about. I spent a wrenching afternoon with him near the end of our interviews when I was trying to pull the information out of him. You know, it had been reported elsewhere that something had gone on, that he did not leave of his own volition. And he's always maintained all these years that that's exactly what he did, that he'd put in 25 good years at the Los Angeles Times, and that it was time for him to move on. But he did this when he was still in his 50s and still had many good years ahead of him.
Why was Otis Chandler pushed out of the LA Times?
Otis planted the seeds of his demise in 1960 when he published the five-part series on the John Birch Society. It alienated not only his aunt and uncle, but several other members of his family. In fact, the majority of his cousins thought that he had begun turning the Los Angeles Times to the left. His hiring of liberal icons like cartoonist Paul Conrad and the editorial page editor Anthony Day really turned off the members of the Chandler family, who silently sat in the background but collected their corporate dividends on a regular basis, and sat on the board of directors of the Times Mirror Company. And by the early 1980s, when he began to recede from the paper, his marriage had broken up in 1980, and he remarried and began to go on more and more vacations. It was the right time for the other side of the Chandler family to strike and take back the newspaper. That's basically what happened. There was a somewhat convoluted, for want of a better term, palace coup in 1985 when the chief executive officer of Times Mirror, Robert Oberu, sent a group of trustees from the Times Mirror board to Otis's office and told him that his time was up. Otis went out to dinner that night and wept over a bottle of wine about what had happened to him, but basically he understood or believed that he was powerless to do anything about it. So with good grace, he went ahead and accepted it, the decision of the board, and stepped down as chairman of the Times Mirror Company and pretty much walked away from the newspaper. I mean, he was still on the board of directors, but his voice became more and more that of a dissident as the years passed and the paper moved in a different direction.
Well, Dennis McDougall, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Terry.
Dennis McDougall is the author of the new book, Privileged Son, Otis Chandler and the Rise and Fall of the L.A. Times Dynasty. Last year, the L.A. Times was sold to the Chicago Tribune Company.